I'm trying to get harder and tougher mentally and physically every day of my life.
You're either the growth mindset or you're the fixed mindset.
If you're trying to be the best, you need to look at who the best is and see what they do.
Relentless pursuit of progress.
There's a difference between the best and the rest.
Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast.
Champions are built in the mind first.
Where we interview scientists, world champions, doctors, and experts in just about every area of health and fitness.
What do you care enough about? What are you fascinated enough about to go so deep and learn so much that you'll know more about it than anyone else?
And now, here's your host, Michael Cashew.
And welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast. Today, I'm taking over for your host, Michael Cashew, so that I can interview him for you guys.
Hey, babe.
Thanks for being here, Michael.
Nice intro. Who are you, actually? You didn't say your name.
I'm Adi Cashew, his wife. And I'm the one who interviewed Michael last time. This is the second time you're being interviewed on your own podcast. I'm really excited to be doing this again because I think so much has changed since the last time. And it was really, honestly, so nostalgic to like listen to that old podcast. And for those of you that didn't listen to it in the past, it's episode 46. I believe the title is How I Beat Drug Addiction and Won the CrossFit Games. And we talked a lot about your story, like where you came from, where you grew up. We talked about your relationship with your family. We talked about going through drug addiction, the different feelings that you went through, like why you think that happened, how you've grown since then, winning the CrossFit Games, having back surgery, going through back surgery, and then building a business and becoming a coach, and to the point that you were then, I think it was in 2016, and we were living in San Marcos, Texas, and we talked about that whole journey up until then. So if you haven't listened, it's a really good episode with a lot of great lessons. Michael has a very interesting story. I am biased, but I do think it is a really interesting story and super inspiring. So go and listen to that. You can listen to that after this podcast or before, either or, it would work. Today we're going to talk about catching up from then to now, like what's changed and what's gone well, and maybe what hasn't gone as well, and how other people can be inspired and learn from that.
You're naturally much better at this than me.
No, I don't think so. That is not true. I've practiced.
You're killing it. Did you actually practice that introduction?
No. Oh, okay. But I practiced like writing these notes in front of me.
I would not put it past you.
Well, so we're going to catch up. At the time, we were living in San Marcos, and that is 45 minutes south of Austin, Texas. And we live in Austin, Texas now. So I want to tell everybody why you chose living in Austin, Texas, or why we chose living in Austin, Texas, and how that transition's been, maybe why we even moved away from San Marcos.
Well, when we moved to San Marcos, we thought we were moving to Austin because on the map, it's just like right there. But with traffic, it's 45 minutes. So we had a great time in San Marcos, but it just wasn't for us in this chapter of our lives. And the reason we wanted to move to Austin in the first place was a mixture of a lot of things. It kind of checked the most boxes of any city that we were aware of, at least, right? I think the biggest thing is the people here. The people are a great combination of like family and community values because it's in the South. But then there's also a lot of like Western culture and like progressive thinking. It's also a very fit city. There's also amazing food. Mm-hmm. So those are the big ones. And there's also like a decent amount of nature relative to the rest of Texas. And so we can kind of scratch the itch of getting outdoors and, you know, mountain biking and rock climbing and hiking and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not you know, we talk all the time. We really miss the mountains, but it checks more boxes than any places that we've ever been. And I think the biggest thing that brought us from San Marcos to here is we both really craved deeper relationships outside of our relationship, deeper friendships. And it was just hard to, we were traveling so much, and it was hard to really make these deep relationships that thrive on consistency over time, right? We just weren't able to spend enough time with people. And that's the biggest reason why we moved out.
Yeah, especially when everyone was a 45-minute drive away. So it was a lot harder to make friends. For anybody who's, you know, moved to a new city, we are 28 years old. Making friends at 28 when you're in your routine of your business is a lot harder than when you're in college or university and you're just like lots of free time, not as many responsibilities. What was like the biggest challenge or success, one or the other, moving to a new city? And we knew nobody in Austin before we moved here.
Correct. And I think it's harder if you're in a remote, like if your career is remote. So we had, you know, we would go to the gym, but outside of the gym, we didn't have to go to any place where people were. So there wasn't, you know, most people have at least their job where they show up and they're around the same people. Mm-hmm. And I know that relationships are built through, like, attraction is built through propinquity, repetition plus proximity. So that's how we are attracted to other people and start to form relationships. And we didn't have almost any of that, right, other than the gym. And that's where, honestly, our first relationships were. What worked for us is just saying yes more times. So when people would, at certain times in our relationship, we were so focused on each other and our business that we didn't make a lot of space for friendships. And so if it wasn't someone that we absolutely clicked with and loved, then we would just shut them down because we, you know, we actually had other things going on. Over time, we started making that a bigger priority and making the space for it. And we started saying yes to the people that were asking us to hang out. That was number one. The more important thing was anytime we saw someone that we met someone that we even were remotely interested in getting to know, we both have started to be really proactive about spending time with them, right? And it's almost like dating again, mm-hmm, right? Where I think both of us have gotten into the rhythm of like making the first move and just asking people to hang out, you know? Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this a lot where both of us are also, in most of our relationships, we are the initiators. And sometimes it doesn't feel so good when it's really lopsided, where you're the only one asking someone to hang out. They never ask you to hang out. However, I've been able to kind of get over that for the first time in my life recently, knowing that, you know, really my end goal is just to hang out with people and to get closer with them. Whether they initiate or I initiate, I'm still getting the end goal. If I don't create a story about who initiates and what does that mean, do they like me, et cetera, if I can drop that whole story, then that's not an issue and I can actually just build these relationships. So the biggest change that we've made, especially in the last year and a half, 2 years, is initiating those conversations and just like really pursuing them like we would someone that we're dating.
Yeah. I think in terms of the initiation, one of the things that we do is we don't just say, hey, I want to hang out, which I think is like a really common thing. A lot of people say like, oh, I'd love to hang out sometime. You and I are pretty much like, I'm available this day. Because if we don't put it on the calendar, it's pretty likely something else will take up that time on the calendar. And then we won't have the space to hang out with them when they ask it. We're not as good at like random spontaneity on a random night, like Wednesday, like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Like, definitely love those invitations and can make that happen. But we've actually been like, hey, I'm available next Thursday. Does that work for you? And then making that commitment has made it easier to be like actually hanging out with people instead of having this like open loop with other people.
100%. And yeah, some people are surprised when we do that. Yeah. Actually, they're like, damn, you're serious about
we want to hang out for sure. And one lesson that you taught me, you kind of touched on a little bit, is I actually had this belief that if I didn't click with someone immediately, like on immediate meeting them, I'm like, oh, I just love that person. Like, we totally connect. We have a lot in common. I would kind of just not want to hang out with them. And I would have this like negative thought in my mind, like, I have better things to do, or like it would be more fun to even just be alone at home. And you really helped me see, you know, maybe it just like that person's a little bit nervous meeting somebody for the first time and they're not like 100% themselves. And some people take a couple times of meeting them to really show you their true selves or to really be more comfortable. And it's worth giving people more opportunities to do that mm-hmm. than just like writing them off at first impression if you really do want to make friends.
Totally. Yeah, some people, some really amazing people just mm-hmm. take some time to open up, right? And so if I see one trait or a couple traits in someone that I really love and I feel like I can learn from them and I feel like I get something valuable out of that relationship, even if there's something I don't love about them, I'll give it a little bit of time to see if it's just like them putting up a wall and being a little bit reserved.
Totally. Yeah, that's a huge lesson that you taught me. So thanks for that. I have more friends than I've ever had in my life,
yes,
actually.
Yes, you do.
So on the last podcast, we talked about you competing at the CrossFit Games, winning the CrossFit Games twice, how you like reached this pinnacle of your career and you're like pretty satisfied not competing in CrossFit anymore because of that. Like it was easier for you to turn away from CrossFit because, you know, you did win and it was...
And I had the back surgery. So that's why I got out of it in the first place. So it was easy for me to say... okay, it'll be safer for my long-term health mm-hmm. and be like, okay with that rather than fighting that.
Yeah. So fast forward 2017 and you and I swear we were working out the same amount. We were just doing the level 2 class at CrossFit Yakarhu and you did the open. And you qualified for regionals as an individual. Like, talk about that. Was you were doing the open? I think we were just doing the open to be part of the community. Mm-hmm. Talk about that experience. I mean, you had said you weren't going to compete in CrossFit again. You ended up not going to regionals as an individual, but competing on Carhu's team that year. Talk about the experience. I think you like kind of even surprised yourself a little bit.
Absolutely. I think I surprised myself. Well, I don't know about more than anyone because I felt fit at the time. I mean, we started going 4 days a week, 5 days a week, mm-hmm. and I felt like I was in very good, I felt very conditioned, but I really doubted myself and it didn't even enter my mind that it was a possibility. Was I shooting for it? Definitely. I was shooting to qualify for regionals and I wanted to do the best I could, but I didn't think there was any chance that I could still do that because I had been out of it for so long. Mm-hmm. When I would go through periods when we first met, literally going months without working out, which created a whole host of problems in terms of like my integrity with myself and even my physical health, like mm-hmm. mood and energy, so many things that I wasn't in alignment with. And so I just didn't think there was any chance. And it taught me like our bodies are really good at holding things that we work really hard for, like strength and endurance and skill level. If we're willing to put in some hard work for another, at least short period of time, we can get back to, close to where we left off at least, rather quickly, unless we are an elite specialist. I think elite specialists it's not the case as much, right? They might take a little bit longer.
Some of them. I mean, even like Amy Everett, mm-hmm. She's 41 years old, turning 42 in February. And she competed in weightlifting many years ago. And I mean, I think her best snatch is 95 kilos. This is a 63 kilo athlete. And that woman can train for like 2.5 months and snatch over 80 kilos again. I mean, not saying it's like 90 kilos, like 90 mm-hmm. kilos would be like next level, but I mean, she snatched 83 kilos, like training a couple months. Like you do maintain a lot more, like 80 kilos at her body weight is like what most girls my age and younger are like fighting for.
Right. But there's the discrepancy, right? She's like fit 12 to 15 kilos off her mm-hmm. best. I hit PRs like really quickly because, you know, I was a generalist. Mm-hmm. How was it other than that? It was extremely fun for me because I approached it in a much different way. I put literally no pressure on myself to excel and perform at my best. I just genuinely wanted to do my best. I didn't overwork myself. I didn't stress out about how I was comparing to others. And a lot of the things that I've started to teach other athletes in the last few years I did for the first time, because I didn't know anything about sports psychology or mindset when I was competing. I got into that when I became a coach. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting to kind of naturally go into these positive mindset habits as I was competing. And it was lastly, it felt amazing to have a really big goal or a big event to train for, because when you have something like that, I feel like your focus just gets, you can get just laser focused, and all of the little mundane things around training, like eating right and sleeping and recovering and et cetera, they become really easy. Yeah. And I've just felt so dialed in, and it trickled into every other area of my life, which was amazing.
So on that same vein, you competed on Carhu's team that year. I know that in that team, you were kind of like the leader of the group.
Vocally, for sure.
How did it feel competing with a different team, being out on the floor at regionals? You know, like, what was the difference? I'm sure there were differences, but like, what I've seen from you since then, is it kind of, even since then, it kind of like reignited like a fire for you to accomplish things, not just in the gym, but like across your life. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
I think there were way more similarities than there were differences. Mm-hmm. What I loved more than anything about that crew was that everyone worked extremely hard, and we were, I don't know, rather like professional about it. Like, when we showed up to work, we worked hard and we ate right and we prepared, you know, as well as we could. And at the same time, we had a lot of fun. And I think that allowed us to perform our best. What I see a lot of, especially teams doing, because it's kind of more amateurs usually, is taking it way too seriously. And then because of that, making a ton of errors in game time. I don't know which it is.
On game day.
so we had a ton of fun. We were joking around outside of workout times. And so that, yeah, it was really fun. What was the other part of this question?
That being competing at regionals seems like it kind of ignited a new competitive fire for you.
For sure. I had this, I've talked about this a lot. Like, when I had my back surgery, I had this kind of like adverse reaction where I felt like if I couldn't be the absolute fittest of my life, then I'm just not going to invest in my physical like exploration at all. And for years, I didn't feel like I was ever going to be an athlete anymore. I didn't feel athletic. I didn't feel really confident about my body in general. And this really reignited this desire to compete and to explore movement and to develop new skills. And so I did, you know, I did CrossFit for a little bit, and I don't know if you're okay with me fast forwarding, but
I'm
absolutely obsessed with jiu-jitsu now. And I feel like I'm obsessed with it in the way that I was CrossFit. And I'm taking a lot of the tools that I gained in learning how to build skills and become better at CrossFit, I'm applying them to jiu-jitsu. And specifically, like, I'm dissecting the practice and basically like focusing on weaknesses. These are things that I picked up probably 2 years into CrossFit, like honing in on specific weaknesses and coming up with a game plan, rather than what I think a lot of people do in CrossFit and jiu-jitsu, is just like hope to show up to class and, you know, hope that does it.
You're being way purposeful about your training. Exactly. And like where you want to go and what you're trying to achieve.
Exactly. And it was definitely ignited that competitive drive and craving for like development of movement complexity. It was inspired by getting back into CrossFit.
I see this happen a lot where you have an athlete who's been really successful. I mean, I wasn't as successful as you were in CrossFit and weightlifting, but I definitely competed for years in weightlifting. And
you got a medal.
I won a medal at Nationals. And I, going from competing and like exercising was training, it wasn't exercising. I kind of had the same attitude. Like, if I'm not going to the gym to train, what am I going to the gym for? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the point in trying to get better at something, I'm not going to be as good as I used to be. So I think it's really inspiring that, you know, you were able to A, go compete in CrossFit and not put the pressure on yourself to be the best or go to the win the CrossFit games, which you had that, definitely had more of that when you're competing with Hackspack. And then now, you know, be like, I actually do want to get better at things. And there's so many things that you could get better at physically, and having a physical practice that you're motivated to go and do every day is a great way to, you know, stay young and mm-hmm. be playful and feel great about yourself, and not just, you know, in the other avenues of like career and relationships.
100%. And I think there's utility in it's a very aggressive sport. And I feel like I am kind of not encouraging, but I am embracing my masculinity in a way. And I think in today's society, men are being pushed to be less masculine, and we're told that that is toxic and that's a bad thing. And there are certainly just atrocious examples of people having toxic masculinity and using their strength for evil and all of those things. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not negating that. But I think there are a lot of problems when society is trying to shift all men towards, basically towards the middle.
Also at the same time, shifting women
towards the middle. 100%.
Women are being definitely, like, I know for myself, like a lot of my success came from being a more masculine female. Mm-hmm. So it was like glamorized to be right. more masculine. So we're kind of like, all of us are shifting more towards the middle, mm-hmm. which, not to say that there aren't women who are naturally more masculine, which is like amazing. I'm just definitely naturally more feminine. Mm-hmm. So I was like shifting myself away from my like natural state
your
of
core,
being.
Right. Yes. And so both of us are simultaneously like embracing our core energies, if you want to call mm-hmm. it, right? Sexualities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really awesome. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to take a little bit of a tangent. Going back to that past podcast, it really is crazy to listen to that podcast, because so much has changed since then. And I can hear like in your voice, like where we were then and what we were talking about outside of the podcast and like what was going on in your life. And I love that we get to share our experiences and hopefully inspire others to be their best selves. And that's kind of the point of doing this whole thing. So at the time, I just want to talk a little bit about, you were going through like a harder time, not just like you weren't competing in CrossFit anymore. You didn't really know your direction in terms of what you wanted to do in the gym. You like weren't feeling super motivated in a lot of different areas. And I think the words like you and I have used is you weren't 100% sure of like where you're next, like what your vision was for your life, like 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And that was making it hard for you to find meaning or purpose in the everyday. Can you talk a little bit about what was going on there?
Yeah, that's a great question. There was a lot going on. And mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I was writing in my journal the other day that sometimes it seems like discipline is sometimes like an all or nothing thing. At least for me, it's an all or nothing thing. Like
you're like all or nothing with a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe
I'm more of a moderator. You're more of like an all or nothing.
For me,
yeah.
I'm either like super undisciplined or I'm extremely disciplined across the board. Mm-hmm. And in that period of my life, I was pretty undisciplined all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so it was, yeah, you know, I had all of these values of like physical health and contribution and different things that I just was out of alignment with. I wasn't walking the walk, basically. And some of the biggest ones we already talked about was the physical health. Another one was I didn't feel like I was contributing in my career in the way that I wanted to. And specifically, and I've talked about this on the show all the time. Since I started college, I wanted to do some form of personal development coaching or counseling or therapy with people. And I didn't feel like I was... And I definitely wasn't doing that in my career at the time. I didn't feel like I was having the impact that I wanted to have. And a bunch of things changed in this year, actually. Mm-hmm. A bunch of things changed this year that have gotten me way more in alignment with that. One of the things is joining you at WAG, spending much more time at WAG. Mm-hmm. And the impetus for that was a couple of things. One, I... love the impact that WAG has and the impact that just helping people with nutrition has in general. You and I want to start a family pretty soon, and it makes sense for you to have help leading the company, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be really hard for you to be the kind of mom that you want while also being the CEO and having to work 40, 50 hours a week, right? You can definitely do it, but we talked about you wanting to spend like a very significant amount of time with them, and we just didn't see how that was possible with you being in the exact role that you were at the time. So that feels great. And then I've also started to do some of this personal development coaching that I'm talking about. So I help people work on their past, get really self-aware about the present, and then create a vision for their future. And one of the things I skipped over is I did a lot of personal development work myself this year. I went to Ireland in June. And I've done a ton of therapy over the years, and group and individual therapy, and different courses and all of that kind of stuff. And this was just a little bit of a different flavor of that. It was a 7-day personal development course. And for the first time in a long time, I wrote about my past for like 2 or 3 days straight. And I asked myself some, really deep questions about my early childhood and about my relationship with my parents and about, the impact that different experiences had on my life. And then I wrote about where I'm at right now, if I love what I'm doing, if there's anything that I would change about my life, and then started to construct a vision for my future. And the theme of constructing a vision for my future is, I think it's the biggest theme of my life this year, because it's something I think it's had the biggest impact on me, and it's something that I've now shared with a lot of people. Our friend Joe Polish says, fuzzy targets are never hit. And I was operating in life like I knew where I was going, but really I was just busy, and I was busy doing a lot of things that I liked, but I wasn't working towards any big goal, right? I wasn't working towards something that was really compelling me forward. And so this year I really got clear about what I'm working on in this chapter of my life in the next, 1, 5, 10 years. And these are the things that I'm working towards are enormous, and they're really exciting to me, and they're fully aligned with who I feel I am as a human being and with the kind of contribution that I want to make.
Yeah. I think it's been, from my perspective, watching you, it's been a huge, I think part of going to Ireland and doing this 7-day personal development retreat, A, you went with a friend who like you really respect and trust, and it was really nice to like completely disconnect from what you have going on here, and like going to that like different environment and like going to another country kind of sets the stage for transformation to happen. You're like, everything's different, so therefore like you have different thoughts and you're like more open in a certain type of way.
Yeah, I think it's more open.
Yeah. And you came back and you started to develop like how you wanted your life to look like. Like, what did you want your life to look like in the future? I'm definitely a victim of this. I know that you were back when we did this last episode of this podcast, but and a lot of people go through every single day just like putting one foot in front of the other and, this is the next promotion I should get at my job. Like, so that should be what I should be striving for, or this is the most logical next step. Like, I'm married, we should probably start a family. Not necessarily knowing, where you're trying to go and what you want your life to look like and what kind of life do you want to create. And it doesn't have to be like when you create this vision, you can revisit it and change it up. But having this like what you want your life to look like has been really motivating and inspiring for you, I think. And I think not doing that or like not having any idea of the kind of life that you want to live makes it really hard for you to make decisions in your day to day that can help make that life actually happen. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, like 5 years can pass and you can be like, damn, like I'm not living the life I want to live. What happened? I've been working so hard. I've been doing all these things. I got all those promotions. I like had the kids. I did it all, right? Like I did everything that like logically I'm supposed to do, but right. I'm not living the kind of life I want to live. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like what you... What does like creating a vision for your future look like? Like if I was somebody, I want to create a vision for my future. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? How can I start doing that?
I think this is available online. I think you can Google Lululemon vision and goals. I think that's available out there. That's an exercise that I've done recently. That's super beneficial. If it's not available, then one, I would spend some time working on writing about, number one, what do you value, right? Do you value friendships? Do you value contribution? Do you value personal growth? Write down your top, I would say, 5 to 10 values and put them in order. And the reason you want to put them in order is later, if you know, a good test to see if you're living in line with your values is to look at your... And I'm stealing this from someone else. This isn't my material. Look at your calendar and your checkbook. Where are you spending your time and your money? If you say your spouse is the most important thing, is their highest value, but you're spending 2 hours with her a week or him a week, you're living out of alignment with yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And so knowing for sure what you value and what your highest value or values are is super beneficial because it can guide your day-to-day action. So that's number one. Number two is you can do an exercise called the best day. It's like the best day ever. Just write for 10-15 minutes on what the absolute best day ever is to you. Mm-hmm. Who's there? What are you doing? The more detailed you can be, the better. And if it takes more than 15 minutes, by all means, do that. But the reason you want to do that is just to get your mind kind of in the right space to create a compelling vision, right? Get yourself out of thinking what is possible, what is realistic, and just let your mind free, right? What is the absolute best day for you?
Yeah, and you can be super descriptive about that. Like, are you having a celebration? What are you celebrating? Who's there? What are you eating? You know, it doesn't have to be something that already exists. It could be any best day ever.
100%. Number three, when you look back on your life, what are you most proud of? That's a great one. Number four, actually, I'll stop with three. That's a good start. And again, most of those are just to get yourself in the right headspace for what's to follow. The next is imagine yourself 10 years from today. What is your life look like in these three categories? Health, career, and personal. And in the personal categories is you personally as well as your personal relationships. So that's health, career, and personal. And a lot of people, when I've told them about this exercise, they say, oh, it's really hard to do that. That's totally understandable, but it's still useful to do. I looked up the definition of visionary kind of recently, and it's something like practicing creating vision. No one is born a visionary. Mm-hmm. We have to practice trying to create a vision. And over time, what I've learned about being clear about what we want in life is that part of it is just realizing what it is not, right? What we don't want in our life. And so practice creating this vision, and then you'll get better at this over time. So in that vision, you want to make it one or two paragraphs, kind of concise. Write about exactly how you want your life to look like in 10 years. Don't think about what is possible or realistic. Think about if you could wave a magic wand, mm-hmm. how does it look? And be very bold with this. If it seems completely realistic that's going to happen, then you didn't go big enough. There's a lot of utility
10
there.
10 years is a long time from now. A lot can be done in 10 years.
Yep.
And I've done this exercise before. I found it was really hard to start for me. But once I started to write things I didn't even know I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like just allowing yourself to explore the vision of the future in a way that is like kind of like magic wand type of vibe or energy. I literally was writing things and I'm like, I didn't even know I wanted these things, but that totally feels right. Like that would be so awesome if my life was that way. Mm-hmm. Once I got started, it was hard for me to stop even, or like keep it concise. I was like, oh, what else do I want in 10 years? Like it got really exciting to keep doing it.
The next step is to break that general vision out and turn it into goals. And so you'll write out specific goals for 10 years, 5 years, and then 1 year. And what we're working towards is, what should I be doing now to move me in the direction of living my mm-hmm. ideal life, right? That's the end goal here. So on the 10 years, this is when you start to make it measurable. This is when you start to ask yourself, how do I know when I've accomplished this thing? So if you say in your vision, you know, I have an amazing relationship with my spouse, then on your goals, you have to ask, how do I know when I have an amazing relationship with my spouse? What is present, right? And for you, it might be something like, I have half a day of like a date night, or I have a date night every single week, and I take 1 to 2 7-plus-day trips alone with my spouse per year, something like that. Mm-hmm. Very specific, measurable things. You do that for all three categories, then break it down to 5 years, then break it down to 1 year. Then, and this is not on the Lululemon thing, but then you want to think, What do I need to be doing day to day to accomplish my 1 year goals? Then kind of don't worry about the 10 year. You do the 10 year so
just
that
like
you
sets
can,
the sets the direction. Yes. And if you're in tune with your day to day goals and your 1 year goals, you know you're at least heading in that direction. Like you'll be able to feel more easily if you're not aligned.
Yes. Yes. Then you want to break it down to skills, right? What skills do I need to possess to be able to achieve this thing? Or what habits do I need to have to either achieve this thing or build those skills? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a concrete example. I have a goal of being I have one goal that's to speak in front of 10,000 people, in front of a crowd of 10,000 people and be so good that they immediately ask me back. Like that's how I know I was good.
Yeah.
And so one habit that I have is every week that we're in town, I go to Toastmasters. It's like 75 minutes every Thursday morning that I spend practicing my speaking. That's one little habit that I have that's slowly working me towards that goal. Another thing is I want to be a world-class personal development coach. And as I'm saying this, I realize that I have to clarify that goal a little bit more. How do I know when I'm world-class?
Right.
So I'll go and do that, guys. One thing that I'm doing for that is I'm spending an hour, 5 days a week, developing a course and kind of a framework for how I coach other people.
Yeah. I think this is super powerful stuff. And I've seen, even when we had that last episode, 2016, you were already absolutely crushing it. Like you were crushing it. You had so much going for you. You had so much success. And even just doing these exercises or like creating this vision for yourself has taken things definitely to the next level. 100%. And it's been pretty amazing to see.
I love what someone that we listen to a lot is this psychologist, Jordan Peterson. One thing he says is that what human beings really want is they want a compelling vision or future to work towards. That's one. Two, they want to be on the journey of accomplishing that goal or that vision. And then three, they want to see progress towards that goal. Mm-hmm. And I just feel I that resonates with me so much in this period of my life, because I have these things in the different areas that like these very clear things I'm working towards. And I know that I have the habits that show me I'm actually doing it. And then I have measures of progress for these different things. So I feel like I'm moving closer to it.
I love it. And that's something anyone can do. I hope you guys all do that.
100%.
Yeah. let Michael know how it goes for you. And I'm sure he would love to hear from you. Reach out to him on social media or however you can get in contact with him.
I wonder how you would get in contact with me today.
We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a second. Well, on the topic of habits, one interesting thing of that last podcast was you talked about your morning routine in the podcast. And in your morning routine, you talked about journaling, meditating, doing Ramwad. And it was funny that I listened to it because those are all the things that are in your morning routine today. But at the time, you were not nearly as consistent or as disciplined with your morning routine as you are now. And this, in our 3.5 years of being together, I think we've lived together for all 3.5 years mm-hmm. of being together. You have never, ever been this consistent. If you don't get your stuff done in the morning, you're doing it at nighttime, which is awesome. And it doesn't seem like it's as big of a chore as it was before. Like, oh, I have to do my morning routine, but I'd rather stay in bed. There's this energy of like, I'm excited to get out of bed to start my morning routine. Mm-hmm. What do you think the biggest triggers for that change have been to make that happen? Because I know a lot of people know the value.
There was a trigger and then there's a strategy. The mm-hmm. trigger, I think, was Burning Man. I think it really slapped me in the face, and that whole experience just made me feel like, okay, I am a powerful person. I can be as disciplined as I want to be, and I'm going to live life exactly how I want to live it. And the strategy is start small. So I want to be more disciplined. I'm going to start with the tiniest little thing possible, and I'm going to make that automatic. I'm going to make that habit automatic, and then I'm going to add from there. And literally what I did is I started with, I don't know if it was 20 minutes of meditation, but maybe 10 minutes. And since you've known me, I've meditated, I don't know, most of the time.
Pretty regularly.
But it's been an every single day thing because I started with just like 10 minutes a day. If I could get 10 minutes a day, then I felt like I was sticking to what I set out to stick to, right? And a lot of days I would do Ramwad on top of that, and then journal, and then read. And then some days I just wouldn't have time for that. And so I would just stick to just the meditation for a while. After a month, I also gave myself a consequence. I've been really into providing external.
We'll talk about that a little bit. Like, where did that come from, and how can
another? That was another super big turning point for me. I was texting with my friend Evan probably 3 or 4 months ago. And he just casually mentioned this thing that he and his business partner do where every night they decide what they're going to work on the following day. And they decide, what is the one thing I could spend my time on tomorrow that would move the business forward the most? And they have to spend 4 to 5 hours on that one thing. And if they don't spend that amount of time, then they have to, I think at the time, yeah, I think I just stole theirs. They had to eat 10 double cheeseburgers and 6 ice cream cones. And he didn't tell me that to like teach me anything. He just told me like, that's what we're doing. And I picked up on how motivating that would be to have that consequence on. And so I tried it out in a couple different ways. I tried it out with the personal development thing, that habit. Mm-hmm. And then I tried it out with my morning routine. And I also tried it out with the eating no sugar for a year.
Yeah.
But with the morning routine, I started with meditation. I did that for a month, and then I added on Ramwad, right? And by doing that, when I added on Ramwad, it wasn't difficult at all for me to stick to the meditation anymore. It felt just like a natural part of life, right?
Yeah.
In the past, what I would try to do is go from zero all the way to a full 90-minute routine, and it feels like a lot of energy and a lot of work. So I would just stack one on top of the other and do it really, really slowly to the point where now all of them feel like it's just a part of who I am and a part of my life.
I think a really cool thing that you do that has also trickled, I mean, almost all these things that you do, I just copy and I take them on for myself. So feel free to copy, guys, because I've been copying for 3.5 years and it's transformed my life too. But you do this morning routine first thing in the morning, which I think is like a really powerful strategy for people. It is such a great way to start your day. Mm-hmm. And it provides a little bit less excuses for not doing it. Like going through the day, like doing a habit like that first thing in the morning makes it, I think Daniel Pink with his book, Time, it's about time.
Yeah, I can't remember. I was thinking of that
something
too.
About time, something about like the science behind timing and like when you should do certain activities and when it's best for you. And he talks about in terms of being consistent with things or being like actually following through on things, doing things first thing in the morning is best, especially for exercise. He was talking about exercise specifically when we heard him do this talk, but something like meditation or Ramwad or journaling or, you know, having that morning routine, doing it first thing in the morning makes it easier to be consistent because you just make a, you can make a commitment. Like, I'm not going to start my day without this. And something like that actually makes you flow through your day so much easier. You're ahead of the day. You also get an opportunity to see like what's going on in my head right now. Mm-hmm. As I go into the day, so you can have a little bit more insight into, wow, I seem to be a little bit more stressed than usual today. Just that awareness can help you avoid certain, you know, maybe certain conversations or avoid certain tasks or activities that, that maybe would throw you over the edge. Mm-hmm. Just gives you like a look into like what your day might be like.
Yeah. Doing it first thing in the morning gives you the feeling that you're in the driver's seat of your day rather than just what I think most people do, which is wake up as late as possible
and then
go immediately, like grab a quick breakfast and then go do whatever they have to do.
I was reacting. The queen of that. I would like time it exactly. How many times can I snooze before I have, I could get dressed in 5 to 10 minutes and then I could be out the door and be at work or like wherever I needed to be exactly on time.
Yep.
And there's like this sense of rushing that accompanies that. Mm-hmm. It's ruined a lot of my days, but I didn't even know it was ruining my days. I mm-hmm. thought the snoozing was way more important. Mm-hmm. I do still snooze. I just put the alarm a little bit earlier. I actually really
still
like,
wake up early.
Yeah, I wake up at 7:30 pretty much.
I don't know if you've noticed my new one. I have our strategic goals for our business in my journal. So I journal and then I look at our goals for the next year and I ask myself, what am I doing today to move us towards one of these goals?
Ooh,
that's been kind of helpful.
I like that. That's really cool. I didn't know you were doing that. I have two more things and then I'm going to go to rapid fire questions, which you don't do necessarily on the Brute podcast, I don't think.
Every now and then.
All right. Well, I have some good rapid fire questions for you. Two things. So first, we were talking about how can people reach out to you? And one thing that has been pretty consistent, you've been toying with this for a while of like completely not being on social media or like only going on social media for certain very intentional purposes. Mm-hmm. So I'd love you to talk about probably everyone listening to this podcast goes on social media every single day. And I do. And I now use the Screen Time app to limit. I have the Screen Time app. I'm not allowed to go on social media for longer than an hour. I still ignore it sometimes and go on for longer than an hour, but at least it has some awareness for me of like, how long am I actually spending on social media? You've kind of really seamlessly made this shift. Why did you decide to do it and how has it affected your life?
I think I've always had a little bit of an intuition that it wasn't right for me. Even when did I get out of rehab? 2008, 2009, I would have periods of time where I would go like a full year without Facebook or whatever. And that was the only one that I was on at the time. And I've always felt a little bit like whenever I'm on it, like every time I get off of it, I feel a little bit worse about myself. Like I don't feel like fulfilled by using social media. There are definitely some things I love about it, but there are just a feeling of like comparing myself to others and just some sort of negativity. And then I read the book Deep Work by Cal Newport, literally one of the best books I've ever read. And the whole premise is that we spend most of our time these days in shallow work, doing things like answering emails and being on meetings and switching back and forth between tasks. And he says one of the biggest culprits is social media. And that really resonated with me because at the time I wasn't using social media a ton and I wasn't posting a lot, especially, but I would pick it up at the worst times. I would pick up my phone and click on Instagram whenever I was bored, whenever I was just starting to work on something actually meaningful and creative.
Like a procrastination type of thing?
Absolutely procrastination. And it was kind of like a drug, right? It would help me escape from any kind of discomfort. And I didn't like that. And so I did a little experiment then. And then the reason I came, I did the experiment of just like going off for like a month or something like that. And then I got back on because we're taught these days that, especially for a business owner, I think it's all about business for me. Like the reason that I keep feeling pulled back, that if I don't build my personal brand, that I am at a disadvantage. And that's a very powerful pull for me. Like still to this day, I question it all the time. And then at some point earlier this year, I went off for, I don't know, a few months at least. I think a few months, and it felt amazing. I just all of a sudden felt less stressed out. I felt more present in my relationships. Present meaning like when I'm hanging out with people, I'm actually listening more to them and participating in the conversation rather than my mind wandering and maybe picking up the phone while I'm like around a bunch of people. Like I just don't do that anymore at all. So I'm there, like wherever I am, I'm there.
Right.
Which is awesome. And yeah, right now I have no social media apps on my phone and I just don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. I feel like I have more time in my day and I'm really focused on contributing to Brute and to WAG in the biggest ways possible. And I don't feel like that contribution is made through social media at all. Like I haven't been a part of the Brute or WAG Instagrams in a long time, you know, as in terms of like operating them. And I don't think I'm bringing much value by just looking at Instagram and not posting a lot.
Right. Totally. Yeah. There could be some other options. Maybe to create some content and have somebody else post it on your Instagram for you. There's some options.
Yes, there are. And this is not, I'm not even saying this is like the right strategy for everyone. I think some people have great relationships with it where they provide a lot of value to people that are on there and they don't, you know, compulsively look at it. Mm-hmm. With that said, there are tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on engineers whose sole job is to make these apps addictive. And so their job is to keep you on there as long as possible. And I just, for me, I don't want to live my life looking down at a phone.
Yeah. And there's also someone whose sole job is to put products in front of you that you want to make you want to buy it. Mm-hmm. So that kind of like gets me sometimes. I mean, I love social media. I go on it every day. I am trying to limit my use of social media as well. I actually just watched this really crazy documentary on Netflix called American Meme. And the main characters were the fat Jewish, Paris Hilton, Haley Baldwin, this guy Kirill, who like his whole Instagram account is pouring champagne on topless chicks. And like, he got famous from that, like a bunch of like people that got famous through social media. And one of the quotes from the documentary was from the fat Jewish. I think he said it. He said, social media is like a new drug that came out only 1 or 2 years ago. And we don't know the long-term side effects yet. So and that kind of like resonated with me a little bit. And I do think there, is a way to find out like the way to use it that's best for you. Like, it's kind of like weighing yourself on the scale. Like some people can weigh themselves on the scale every single day and not get super hung up on that number and like just use it as a piece of information and not let it dictate how their day goes. And some people can't. And some people like that really just drives them absolutely crazy. So I think it's really cool that you do that. But if people do want to get in contact with you, how would they get in touch with you? What if they want to tell you, you know, how this stuff, the vision and goals like has impacted their life and how do they tell you?
Email me at michaelcazux@gmail.com. That's about the only place.
All right.
Perfect. Cazayoux.
That works. That works.
That definitely goes against the deep workbook. He's like, turn your social media off and don't tell him where to contact you.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, you could have done that if you wanted.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think I'm going to get too many.
Right. Well, also just don't be upset if he takes a couple of days, if not longer, to answer you. But I know that you would love to hear that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm going to go into the rapid fire questions. You ready for it? Okay, so rapid fire questions. If you had to start a new business today, what would it be? From scratch. Actually, let's say you had $40,000.
$40,000?
Yeah, like you had like a pretty good amount of money.
I wouldn't need any money.
Okay, new business today, what would it be?
I would do completely individualized personal development coaching.
Ooh.
Easy. I could do it for free.
Okay, cool. What is going, this is, we are currently in December of 2018. What is your New Year's resolution for 2019?
Damn, putting me on the spot. To get to and maintain a body weight of 185.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's really good, realistic one for you.
Yeah, I picked up, you know this, I have said I wanted to be 185 for probably 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. and just like kind of yo-yoed back and forth between 190 and 195,
right.
and not been able to do anything about it because I just wasn't consistent. And I used the strategy of starting small, and all I've been doing is literally tracking what I eat. So
without weighing and measuring.
Without weighing and measuring. Sometimes I weigh and measure, but it's kind of arbitrary when I do that.
Yeah.
But I just literally put everything that I eat into my Fitness Pal. So I'm developing this awareness, and I tend to make slightly better decisions when I know it's going in the app.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten down to 190 and I've stayed there for a while.
Yeah.
I was actually at 187 the other day, which is the lightest I've been in a while.
Yeah. What does getting to 185, like what do you hope that gives you? Because sometimes it's like the number is not actually what you're after. Mm-hmm. So having a goal of like 185, getting there without all the other things you're expecting for it to mm-hmm. come with is not necessarily as valuable. Like what do you hope or are going to also develop along with being 185?
I think the big goal is to feel confident over my body, which gives me happiness, like a sense of happiness. Mm-hmm. I also think that I'm going to compete in jiu-jitsu at some point, and it's going to be more advantageous for me to be lighter. I also strongly believe it's going to be better for my joints in the long term to be 10 pounds lighter, even a little bit lighter if possible. And I don't think I would ever have been nearly as big if I wasn't as into CrossFit as I was. Like my dad is, I mean, he's 2 inches shorter, but he's a much smaller guy. Right. And I think I would have been much more like him if I didn't hit it as hard.
I'm just like maybe putting words in your mouth, but also I think that, you like the having awareness of what you're putting in your body. Like just getting down there, it's like you have to be more conscious about what you choose to eat and making better choices. I think that's
right. Yeah, the awareness isn't in and of itself attractive to me. It's the me taking care of myself. Like mm-hmm. I feel like I'm in control and I'm taking care of myself.
Right. Cool. I love it. Two more. What is one misconception about you?
Well, I'm not sure how people perceive me, but I think people are surprised sometimes when I talk about having fear or self-doubt. But I don't know how much of it other people feel, but I feel an enormous amount of self-doubt in my life. Whether it be on this podcast or public speaking or in friendships, you know, I've told some friends recently that I feel insecure when I'm around them because I think they're smarter than me and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I think you've
gotten the response to that of being like, you do? Like, really?
Right.
Like people have been surprised by that.
Right. They have, but it's like a feeling, right? And it's mm-hmm. kind of a low level anxiety that I've always walked around with that turns into this story about, you know, me not being good enough in some way. But I feel that feeling a lot in my life. Mm. And I don't really use it as an excuse very much, right? And I use this example that it's kind of a beacon, right? I know that I'm doing something right if I feel afraid or I'm doubting myself, mm-hmm. right? I know it's something like that matters to me that is big enough to kind of scare me.
Yeah. I love it. So the misconception is that you don't feel any fear or self-doubt. Okay, last one. It's my favorite. If you had a debut album, what would it be titled?
Debut album means like first album?
Yeah, your first album.
Oh, that's easy.
Okay.
What's popping with it?
What's popping with it?
I mean, you can't. Oh, is this on? Yeah, I can't like put too much time in it.
What's popping with it?
Yeah. Not with it, with it.
With it, like W-I-T
yeah, so or D? Yeah, P-O-P-P-I-N.
Mm-hmm, poppin' with an not a comma. Damn.
Quotation mark? Quotation mark. Apostrophe?
Apostrophe.
Yeah, poppin' with it.
How do you spell wit?
W-I-T.
W-I-T?
Like it sounds.
What's poppin' with it? Yep. Oh my God, that's so funny.
It'd be a rap album.
I love it. Well, thanks for letting me interview you. I think I did a little bit better than I did last time.
You crushed it. You should do this more often.
This has been so much fun. I hope you guys got some stuff out of it. I know I did, and I get to talk to this guy every single day. So if you want to reach out to Michael through me on social media, you can do that.
Interesting.
Go to my social media, slide into my DMs. A D Cashew. You can find it on the internet how to spell that.
No, you can't.
A D E E C A Z A Y O U X. And I will relay the message if you'd prefer it that way. But thank you for listening and tune in to the next week's episode, whatever that will be.
Thanks, babe. Later, guys. Hey, guys. Over the past 5 to 10 years, there's been a huge explosion in the number of options in training programs for the sport of fitness. And because there are so many options, it can be really confusing picking the best one for you. So a couple years ago, I created a guide specifically to help you pick the right training program to meet your needs and to fit your lifestyle. In this guide, I go over how to avoid the biggest programming mistake that I see people making, 5 costly misconceptions about programming, training methods that work best, 3 mistakes to avoid when choosing a training program, the importance of value and price, and then finally, 4 steps to reaching your potential. And this is a free guide. This is something specifically just to help you find what's best for you. And you can get this by going to brutestrengthtraining.com/PYP. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/PYP.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.